Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in for John Tanza. Here are some of the top stories making news across Sudan, South Sudan, and the rest of Africa on this Monday, January the 13th, 2025. Nicole Wedersheim, a deputy director at Human Rights Watch, says that the U.S. declaration of a genocide in Darfur is important to victims.
They can feel that their trauma is recognized. I mean, I don't want to understate that.
Bor resident Peter Ajak Ayom welcomes an audit of Jonglei state finances, saying it's long overdue.
The government is not ready to deliver services, but of course we understand that the money that is collected can do something better for the people of Jonglei state.
We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on South Sudan in Focus. Experts and rights advocates are reacting to the United States' determination on Tuesday, January the 7th, that genocide is being committed by South Sudan's Rapid Support Forces and its allies. Reporter Henry Wilkins has more.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said in a January 7th statement that Sudan's paramilitary Rapid Support Forces, RSF, and allied militias have systemically murdered men and boys, even infants, on an ethnic basis. Determining that crimes committed by RSF and its allies amount to genocide. The leaders of a Darfuri advocacy group reacted to the news. Adam Rojal is with the General Coordination of Darfur Displaced People and Refugees.
The community in Darfur is well aware of the crimes and violations committed against them. They consider these acts of genocide, ethnic cleansing, war crimes, and crimes against humanity to be a natural part of their lives. For them, the recognition and acknowledgement by the international community and larger countries is a victory and a step towards achieving justice.
The RSF and its associated militias are mostly ethnic Arabs, victimizing black Sudanese, particularly the ethnic Masalit people. The declaration is a first step towards justice, say rights groups. Nicole Windersheim, a deputy director at Human Rights Watch.
They can feel that their trauma is recognized. I mean, I don't want to understate that.
Blinken also announced sanctions against RSF's leader and businesses linked to the paramilitary group. Windersheim says this is the second time in 20 years that genocide has been declared in Darfur.
Lessons unlearned and not enough preventative action.
Many consider genocide to be the most serious crime under international law. Cameron Hudson of the Center for Strategic and International Studies says the legal implications are significant.
Significant from a legal perspective, but I think also from a moral perspective.
Blinken singled out RSF commander Mohamed Hamdan Daglo for violating commitments under international law to protect Sudanese civilians. One leader accused in the 2004 genocide in Darfur is still on trial at the International Criminal Court. Meanwhile, Rojal says ethnic killings continue and that ongoing fighting in parts of Darfur has led to famine.
Direct killing inside the camps, in the cities and neighborhoods, and starvation, famine, and hunger, these all continue.
When asked for a response to the accusations, an RSF spokesperson provided VOA with a statement widely shared on social media. It said, "This decision has no value or impact on the current situation in Sudan, but may complicate the Sudanese crisis." The statement does not deny the allegation of genocide. Henry Wilkins, VOA News.
Sudan's armed forces, the SAF, have captured the town of Wad Madani, the capital of Al Jazeera State, over the past few days. The paramilitary Rapid Support Services had controlled the town for most of its conflict with the SAF, which began in April 2023. Reuters News reports the RSF occupation of Al Jazeera turned the fertile state into one at risk of famine. Its tight-knit villages were emptied out by violent raids as fields lay fallow or were set on fire, residents and eyewitnesses have said. Also on Monday, Port Sudan, the seat of Sudan's army-aligned government, was without power. A drone attack blamed on the RSF hit a major hydroelectric dam in the war-torn country's north. Sudanese army said the Marowe Dam was hit by a number of suicide drones. Journalists with the French news agency AFP in Port Sudan said widespread power outages have persisted since early Monday. Jonglei State Governor Maujub Biel Turuk has ordered an audit of state books from 2022 to 2024. The order includes scrutiny of financial transactions, including grants from the national government, personal income tax collections, and state-owned assets. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from the Jonglei State Capital, Bor.
Governor Maujub Biel Turuk says the audit he has ordered will ensure transparency in the handling of Jonglei state funds and uncover any mismanagement of resources.
There was a serious vacuum in Jonglei state. The former governor was based in Juba at the Crown Hotel and only visited occasionally. There was no security meeting, no council and ministers meeting. If you are not meeting, how will you prepare for the budget? There was no administration. The governor didn't even go to the office for much of the previous 4 years.
Governor Maujub says Jonglei State has been receiving $190,000 from personal income tax, or PIT, a month. Jacob Loy, chairperson of the Jonglei State Anti-Corruption Commission, welcomed the audit, adding that his commission was powerless during previous administrations.
It is a good time for government of Maujub to give a chance to anti-corruption to find the cases of corruption. The government of 2021 up to 2024, they killed the anti-corruption function in the state. We don't have any powers and a resolution. We also request the government of the national government to come also and see the way forward, but there is no follow-up. We wait until there is a further notification. Right now, we get a solution.
Peter Ajak Ayom, a Bor resident, also welcomed the audit, saying it was long overdue. He says if previous state governments had been more transparent, critical issues such as insecurity and poor health care could have been better addressed.
The PIT plus other taxes that are collected within the state can really help the state to move forward in terms of development. But of course, we are not seeing all this because the government have no strategies of maybe trying to have development, opening waterways, extending the feeder roads to other villages, and maybe trying to bring more drugs to the hospitals and the rest, simply because the government is not ready to deliver services. But of course, we understand that the money that is collected can do something better for the people of Jonglei State.
Governor Maujub says former Governor Dinei Jok Chagur did very little to present a state budget in 4 consecutive years. Jonglei State former Governor Dinei Jok Chagur had agreed for an interview, but he has not responded to texts and calls. The comprehensive audit is to begin in the coming weeks, and Governor Turuk promised to release findings once the investigation is completed. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
Some opinion leaders in Yambio County of Western Equatorial State said that there should be restrictions on selling alcoholic beverages to youth in Yambio County. For VOA News, Matias Samuel Timatio reports from Yambio.
Under the South Sudan Constitution, the legal drinking age is 18 years old, but in Western Equatorial State's Yambio County, some people say that restriction is not followed. Friday Samuel Bakiapai is a resident of Yambio County. He says he was disappointed to see children misbehaving under the influence of alcohol during New Year celebration. He urges the government to ban sales of alcoholic beverages to minors in Yambio.
It is our responsibility to see that our children are growing the best way. That's why I need to urge our government. When it's coming to New Year, they need to put on a strong regulation and rules, especially to those who are selling alcohol to underage children.
Yambio resident Bibian Henry Wandu blames parents who send children to buy alcohol.
A child is a child, and a child does not know what is bad and what is right. It's our duty to direct them. Our business personnel, they are just after money. It's not good. They are destroying our future. You are not supposed to sell alcohol to a child who is under the age of 18. It's not good.
Anigunde Cecilia B. is the state minister for gender, child and social welfare. She says her ministry will punish parents whose children are involved in drinking. The punishment could include sending them to work on a farm for the state government.
We want to see that children are not drinking alcohol. That is why this time we are going to use the security forces as well as implementing the customary law, which was already launched for Western Equatoria.
Customary law, which was already launched for Western.
John Singira is the Yambio town mayor. He says his office issued a local order in 2023 banning minors from clubs. He says his office will put more effort into implementing the order. Reverend Elinama Jacob is the secretary general of the Interfaith Council for Peace Initiative in Western Equatorial State. He says the government needs to raise taxes on alcohol to fight underage drinking.
I appeal to all the church leaders to begin preaching this in all the churches, condemning this kind of behavior in all the churches to all the parents, so that people begin to know that they have done something very bad. I am sure this was not only in Western Equatoria or in Yambio. I am sure this was all over South Sudan. To the family and the parents, we are forgetting the church. We are forgetting God. Therefore, let this year 2025 be the year of complete turn.
Philip Fadul Kisanga sells alcoholic beverages in Masia Market in Yambio. He says business people should not be blamed for selling alcohol to children, but rather the parents who send their children to buy liquor, which teaches the children how to drink.
Some parents take advantage of sending their children to come and buy from us, so the child may continue buying from us every day, in which one day the child may decide to test what the father has been sending. So could that one be our own problem? If the child now get addicted to start drinking alcohol outside there, is it our problem? Because for us, we are running our business, we need money.
The World Health Organization says alcohol abuse can lead to health issues including blindness, heart failure, chronic pancreatitis and diabetes. For VOA News, I am Matthias Samuel Timatio, reporting from Western Equatorial State Capital, Yambio.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, holdout South Sudanese form a new group. Find out why after the break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what skill would you most like to master?
I would love to learn how to use my hands. That is craft work. Making the baskets and doing more of the clay artwork.
So I think I will go technology any day, anytime. So mastering what I do already, which is practically technology, which is software development, applications development, analysis and data mining.
I would love to play the organ. I love it. I love the sound. I would want to have it at home to play to my family.
Now many people don't like to be teachers. So for me, I'm willing to be.
I appreciate people that I can sing because I can't sing myself and I don't have a very good voice. So I will go for singing.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
One of Africa's top security research organizations says terrorist groups on the continent are recruiting children as young as 11 and training them as extremist fighters. The study says the groups are grooming youngsters online and through social media while still using traditional methods of physical recruitment in disaffected communities. Darren Taylor reports.
As Africa becomes increasingly developed and technology spreads into even hard-to-reach villages, jungles and deserts, more people gain access to the internet and cell phones. Martin Ewe of South Africa's Institute for Security Studies, the ISS, says children are very attracted to social media networks and extremist websites, making them vulnerable to indoctrination.
Through social media, you get contact with people, and then you show interest. From that interest, you show commitment. And once they know that you are committed and that you cannot betray, you are then recruited. And then they ask you to buy your own ticket, which is, again, proof of that commitment. Mm-hmm. And once you buy your own ticket to fly, and then they tell you, look, once you are with us, we will take care of you. We will provide for all your needs, and you'll become one of us.
The ISS investigation focused on the latest recruitment methods used by some of Africa's most active terrorist organizations, including Islamic State, or ISIS, and Boko Haram. Many of these groups advocate for violent takeovers of legitimate governments and replacing them with caliphates that implement harsh Islamic laws. They also commit atrocities, including massacres and beheadings. ISS security expert Willem Els says extremists are increasingly using children to help them achieve their objectives and training them to commit acts of terror.
The modus operandi that we saw that they follow when it comes to the recruitment and also the radicalization of their recruits, it forms a pattern. That is where we got our assessment from. It is fairly widespread. We saw that in West Africa, there are groups like, for instance, Boko Haram, the ISIS group ISWAP. We also saw the JNIM, that is an Al-Qaeda-affiliated group. But also saw in Somalia, that is also Al-Qaeda with your Al-Shabaab. But also then in DRC and in Mozambique that are affiliated with ISIS.
Johannesburg-based anti-crime activist Yusuf Abramji recently helped South African authorities stop a teenager from allegedly trying to join Islamic State.
Well, I received a call from family members of the 15-year-old missing Cape Town girl. And during the discussion, it emerged that there was suspicion that she may be involved with ISIS. Some documents were allegedly found in her room. Investigations are ongoing, and these investigations will take time. Remember, we're talking here of social media, we're talking of an internet, we're talking of tickets that were booked possibly to the Middle East. The many questions that need to be answered include whether or not she was aided and abetted by anyone locally, who paid for the tickets, how did she manage to board a flight being a minor.
Abramji says terrorists recruiting children isn't new. What's new, he says, is that the recruits are getting younger. The youngest fighter the ISS documented is just 11, but El says fundamentalist organizations have recruited younger children. He says the crisis is growing in South Africa, a country previously not affected much by extremism.
If we do not attend to it, it can explode in our face and come back to hide us. We saw that South Africa was very reluctant to act against terrorism. We've been on warnings by the U.S. Department of Treasury. They flagged three individuals. Later last year, they flagged another three for terror funding, but also for training and the movement of funds from South Africa to places like Somalia and Uganda.
A big problem across Africa, say many analysts, is the weakness of intelligence departments. This means security agencies often don't get information about terrorist activities, including child recruitment, until it's too late. For VOA News, I'm Darren Taylor in Johannesburg.
In South Africa, a video has surfaced from a disused gold mine where hundreds of illegal miners have been trapped for more than 6 months. The video shows more than 100 dead bodies, and angry mining community rights groups are accusing the government of committing a massacre by restricting water and food. Tuso Kamalo reports from Stilfontein.
A video shot in the mine in Stilfontein
Northwest Province starts with an unnamed miner showing piles of bodies tightly wrapped in plastic. Some are clearly highly decomposed. The video ends with the miner making a passionate plea for rescue and food.
People are dying here. Please help. Please, please, please help us. Bring us food or take us out so quickly. But please start with food because we don't have power. We don't have power. We are already dead.
Hundreds of miners have been trapped for months in the Stilfontein mine. Speaking at a media briefing a few meters away from the shaft, human rights lawyer Mameklo Sebei said the video shows what can only be described as a cruel massacre by the South African government. He said they've begged the government for months to allow food and water down the mine and rescue the miners quickly, but that it refused. Recently, allegations were made that police barred community volunteers from sending food to the miners for 13 days. Human rights groups claim the deaths were proof that the government lied when it said miners were choosing to stay underground fearing arrest if they emerged.
This is a Stilfontein massacre. And this massacre, which is what it is really a bloody culmination of a treacherous policy that was pursued by the government.
Zinzi Tom, a community member whose brother has been underground for over 6 months, was in tears at the media briefing. Tom successfully obtained a court order compelling the government to start the current rescue efforts. The government says it never refused to rescue the miners, but it needed time to put together financial resources and a rescue plan. Makosonke Butelezi is the Department of Mineral Resources spokesperson.
They pleaded that they do not have money and they have already spent their money on sealing the shaft. So it's not true that we were forced by the court. We agreed at the court that we will make sure that we facilitate the process to see to it that we retrieve the remaining illegal miners underground.
A rescue team has brought rescue machinery to the site to start retrieving the miners and the bodies. It is illegal in South Africa for independent miners to enter mine shafts that companies have abandoned because they are no longer profitable. The government says the miners are unsafe and that it loses revenue when illegally extracted ore is sold. In addition, the government says many of the illegal miners are victims of trafficking or forced labor. Thuso Kumalo for VOA News in Stilfontein, Northwest Province of South Africa.
It's Kelpie Vibes.
And that's all we prepared for you this Monday, January the 13th, 2025. We now leave you with On the Law from Burna Boy. We've been listening to On the Law from Burna Boy. I'm your host, Jackson Vunganyi, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. On behalf of our producer, Mokbel Yabaro, and our engineer, Joe, we wish you a lovely evening. Remember to join us tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Oh, me all down. Anytime we ask you for the club or the television, your body. Sure, you know, no certainty when you carry 50 kilo somebody. You know, I feel a vibe, you feel a vibe, so baby, why it bomb me? Yeah. And I know you shy, but it's cool when we're making love. On the low, 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 on the low. Angelina, Angelina, you dey cool in my temperature. If you call, I go come deliver. I look for your hand in never. So now me you could love forever. I'm a cocky no feeble letter. I'm a Angelina, Angelina. I'm a Angelina, Angelina. like a signature. Why you want to invest in your me like an interview? I'm trying to put a ring on your finger too. And be a better guy, guy. Be a better guy, guy. On the loop. If you call, I go come deliver. I look for your hand in never. So now me, you could love forever. I'm a cock, you know, feeble letter. I'm an Angeli, Angelina. I'm an Angeli, Angelina.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
Of the five classifications of levels of food insecurity, Phase 5, famine, is the most serious. It is described by the Integrated Food Security Phase Classification System, or IPC, as an extreme lack of food or other basic need, even after full employment of coping strategies, wherein starvation, death, destitution, and extremely critical acute malnutrition levels are evident. If 20% of the population is suffering from famine, and if 2 of every 10,000 people within an area die due to hunger every day, then the entire region is considered to be experiencing famine. That is today the case in Sudan, according to a new United Nations report. Sudan is experiencing one of the greatest human crises not only of the day, but our lifetime, said U.S. Representative to the UN, Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
At least 5 areas are currently experiencing famine, and 5 more we see projected famine over the coming months. And at least 17 additional areas are at risk of famine in the same period. Over 500,000 people, including children, are struggling to survive.
This catastrophe is the direct result of 20 months of brutal civil war, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield. What's more, Sudanese authorities have suspended their collaboration with the IPC system and impede international efforts to provide humanitarian assistance and prevent starvation.
Each and every member sitting here today has seen the evidence that the SAF and RSF have committed war crimes. Each and every member sitting here today has seen evidence the RSF has committed crimes against humanity and engaged in ethnic cleansing. And yet Russia chose obstruction, standing alone as it voted to imperil civilians while funding both sides of the conflict. Yes, that's what I said, both sides.
Nevertheless, we will continue to work tirelessly to prevent abuses and hold perpetrators to account, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield.
The United States has imposed sanctions in response to atrocities and arms procurement, and we are prepared to take further action soon. Now we renew our call for collective action, asking partners to join us in imposing sanctions on individuals and organizations whose actions have worsened this conflict.
We call on all actors to stop these ongoing atrocities, said Ambassador Thomas Greenfield, to end the fighting and allow immediate, unconditional, and unhindered humanitarian access so that tens of millions of people can get the food and water, shelter and medicine they so desperately need.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.